Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another one of our American Herbalist Guild webinars. Tonight we have Michael Tierra, who's one of the grandfathers, founders of our entire herb community, one of the founding members of the American Herbalist Guild, and one of the people that many of us owe a great debt of gratitude for all the work he's done in this field. So tonight he's talking about pulse diagnosis. So, Michael, we're all looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
Great. Thank you, Stephen, and thank you, everyone, for attending this. This is actually part two of a series of three parts. The third part, of course, hasn't been presented yet. The first part is available on YouTube, and let's see. I'm going to advance. And it's available to be viewed on YouTube, and you can go to this website here, and I presume this will be featured, showed on your notes or through some other source if you write to us to get it or jot it down. This is part of the teachings that we do with the East-West Herb School, and we teach planetary herbology, which is uniquely the integration of Western Chinese and Ayurvedic herbal medicine. And if you want more information about this subject and any other information pertaining to our courses, you can go to this website, planetherbs.com. Pulse taking around the world. Today, I think, especially in herbal circles, when we talk about pulse taking, most people are immediately think of traditional Chinese medicine because they seem to be the ones who are most prominently the exponents of this method of diagnosis. However, it is also used in Ayurvedic medicine, and Ayurvedic practitioners are also integrating pulse diagnosis into their practice. And it has also been a very important aspect of throughout the history of Western herbal medicine, dating back to the Greeks and the Arabs, Avicenna and Galen and so forth. All of them used pulse diagnosis, even up through the period of Culpeper and in more recent history up to the 17th and 18th centuries. The reason why pulse taking is so important is because it is part of the assessment modality that's used, that is most accommodating to the practice of herbal medicine, because it diagnoses systems and it diagnoses energetic qualities that herbs particularly are useful for treating. It's not a system that is specifically used to diagnose a named disease in the Western sense. However, I must point out to you that pulse diagnosis has been a part of the Western medical tradition up until the middle, about the 1930s, 1940s, and there is a whole list of pulses, almost exactly the same, except with different names, of course, that Western medical doctors used to have to learn to assess their patients as part of their clinical procedure of diagnosis. So, I'm saying this because for some reason pulse diagnosis is not something that is prevalent in our circles today, except in Chinese practice and by some Ayurvedics. And I believe that it should be an integral part of all diagnostic systems. And so we're going to learn it from the Chinese perspective, and I'll try to make some cross-references as much as possible. These are some of the pulses that are recorded in the biomedical literature. Actually, there's dozens of these that Western doctors used to recognize. The pulsus tardus, a late pulse, a hyperkinetic pulse. These actually can be easily cross-referenced with Chinese pulses that we're going to be discussing. From the Chinese perspective, these are the major sources for historically for pulse diagnosis. It goes back to the Nai Jing, And then the Nanjing, which is the classic of difficult issues, particularly pertaining to the practice of acupuncture. The Meijing was written in the 2nd century by Wang Shuhei, and he named the specific pulse qualities, and designated the three positions, the Sun, Guan, Chi, pulse positions on each wrist. Interestingly enough, the pulse classic was translated by the Arabs into Arabic and was just basically taken into their system of study because they were so interested in a wide range of knowledge, especially about healing and other topics. And then it was retranslated from Arabic probably back into Latin or Italian when it came back to the West. This shows the position of the fingers in the pulse diagnosis. And I mention this because you may encounter some differences in certain practitioners, but this is the one we're using, and this is the one that's mostly practiced, where the index fingers is placed right at the base of the thumb on the inside of the wrist. And I'd like you pretty soon to actually do this on yourself. But before we get to that, I want to point out to you that pulse diagnosis is part of a comprehensive differential diagnostic evaluation. And it can at least be used to confirm a diagnosis. In other words, after you've made an assessment, you can use the pulse to either confirm or reopen up the question whether your diagnosis was accurate or not. That's the most common way that many Chinese practitioners use the pulse today. However, I'm advancing pulse diagnosis to a more frontline position and diagnostic ability. And I think that if you're very dedicated, you can certainly achieve that. What we're actually feeling is the arterial pressure and the ease of occlusion. In other words, how difficult is it, or how much resistance is there when you're feeling the force of the blood going through the passing through the arteries. And we're also feeling the force, whether it's strong or weak, whether it's empty or soft and soggy or faint. Those are important aspects. And specifically, we're evaluating, according to Dr. Will Morris, the tubes, which are the vessels, the pump, which is the heart, the fluid, which is the blood, and the ground substance, which are the tissues surrounding the vessels on all sides. The pulses are examined from a three-dimensional perspective. They're examined by feeling the width of the artery, the depth that you are pressing down where you're finding the pulse, and obviously none of these things can be ascertained when you're feeling only one pulse for the first time. You have to feel several, and then you'll start noticing these differences. But I want to encourage you to ask yourself these questions, even from the very beginning. How wide is the artery that you're feeling? How deep do you have to press in order to find it? And then how strong is the impulse hitting against your finger, which is the chi, or the energy of the heart, and of the whole body, I must say. And how long is the pulse? In other words, we mentioned that there's three positions in each wrist. Does the pulse extend to all three positions? And in some cases, it may even be longer than that, so that you feel it stretching into the hand and stretching into the forearm. All of that is part of one of the indications of distinct pulse qualities. We're also assessing the rhythm of the pulse. Is it regular? Is it syncopated? Is it slow and irregular? Or is it fast and irregular? All of those are signs of a pathological condition. Then we're also feeling the tension that's on the artery. In other words, when you're feeling the artery and you're bouncing up and down on it, is it tense like a guitar string that's being stretched, or is it soft, or is it within normal range? And then we're feeling the contour of the pulse. In other words, what's the overall feeling of it? Is it round and kind of slippery, as we're going to describe that particular pulse? Or is it thin and thready, and so forth? There are some normal pulse variations to take into mind, and so that, and this is probably only of use as you're getting very advanced, but just to let you know, for the sake of education at this point, that each of the pulses is characteristically for each season going to show up slightly more in these particular ways. So the wiry pulse specifically tells us about the liver, and it may tend to be that way just a little bit more in the springtime, because that's the element of wood, which in Chinese medicine goes to the spring. And the flooding pulse, which is a more overflowing kind of pulse, is characteristic going to be slightly more in the summer, which is associated with the spleen and stomach and digestive system. The floating pulse is going to tend to be a little bit more in the autumn, and it's going to feel like it's floating like on air a bit. And then the deeper pulse, having to press down deeper, is going to be associated with winter. Now, these are going to be subtle differences that that only need to be taken into consideration when it seems to be a matter of to consider that this may be the case. If you're feeling somebody and you're finding it a little wiry and it's springtime and it's just a little bit, well, you know, it may not be a liver problem. It may be just part of that seasonal manifestation. There's also the pulse can be affected by geography and environment, and so that it can be a little bit more soggy and slightly rapid and dry and cold, or soggy and dry and cold conditions, and tends to be deep and forceful, and so forth. Now, the gender is an interesting one, because the female pulse may seem weaker and thinner and slightly more rapid than the male pulse. However, another characteristic is that the female pulse is generally stronger on the right and the male pulse is generally stronger on the left. Sometimes this isn't the case, but in most cases it is, and this has to do with the positioning of the heart that is slightly different between men and women. Age also has a bearing on the pulse, and for instance, we notice that an infant's pulse is going to be very fast, 120 to 140 beats a minute. Young children's 90 to 110, and adults could be anywhere from 60 to 90 beats per minute. And the constitution of a person may have some bearing on the pulse as well. You may find some normal pulse variations associated with emotional factors, such as anger and joy and melancholy and grief and fear and fright. Those are also correspondences. Now we get to the position of the different organs that are found on each wrist. Now I'm presenting this, but really what we're looking for at the very beginning is the overall pulse quality. So what you want to do is be able to feel and assess the overall pulse quality. Usually it's done in the Guan position. That's the center where the pulse is felt the strongest. and you're going to try to assess what quality is felt there, and then you may notice secondarily as you go through these other positions, if there's something that pops out to you with you in these areas, then you may note that, and it may correspond with some hypotheses about specific internal organ functions that may be out of balance in the person you're viewing. So now there's differences in terms of these organizations, but this is the standard one that's used in China today and in most acupuncture schools. And mostly these all refer to what are called the yin organs. And the yang organs are not emphasized so much as they used to be. The yin organs are considered to be the root of the whole body. And so the heart, liver, kidney, lung, spleen, and kidney, and so forth. Now, the right hand would be kidney yang, which corresponds to the sympathetic nervous system, and the left hand is kidney yin, which corresponds to the parasympathetic nervous system. Now, because this operates on a continuum of yin and yang, if the right hand, which is sympathetic nervous system, seems strong and the left hand seems weak, then we could say that somebody has kidney yin, or sympathetic nervous system, is weaker in that individual. So there's a reciprocal action between kidney yang, which is on the right hand in the third position, and kidney yin, which is in the left hand in the third position. Note these, the names of these three positions. These are the Chinese names. I like my students to memorize them. Sun is the immediately below the wrist, and Guan is in the center, and Qi is the third position. And sometimes in English it's called bar, inch, which is sun, bar is guan, and qi is called cubit. I may refer to them either way. So there's a fuller description of what I just mentioned, the organs and their placement on the wrist. And more in terms of the description of the pulse in Japanese, TCM classifies 28 or 29 pulses. Japanese emphasize more abdominal diagnosis than pulse, but they mainly refer to the six deep positions as well. Now, the five, Wordsley system, or five element acupuncture as it's called, which was the first system that I learned, simply tries to evaluate everything in terms of a stronger or weaker pulse on each wrist, and doesn't go into all of the refinements that you're going to learn about in this course. It's really important that when you're taking the pulse, that you ask yourself questions, because otherwise you're just taking the pulse and sort of sitting there with a big question mark in your head and wondering what it is that you're feeling, what's so remarkable. And there is something, in fact, to feel for. You're trying to feel whether it's fast or slow. And the way you do that is you must have a watch or a clock with a second hand in front of you. And you count the number of beats within 30 seconds, and you multiply that times 2 to get the beats per minute. A fast pulse will be 90 and above, and a slow pulse will be 60 and below. And what I consider to be kind of a fast pulse is between 80 and 90. So that's a very easy thing, an empirical thing to measure. Everyone can agree on that particular quality, whether it's fast or slow. And that's a very important one, because that tells you whether we're dealing with heat, inflammation, or hypermetabolic condition, or we're dealing with a hypometabolic condition, which is the slow. So just determining that, which is done in every doctor's office still. It's one thing about pulse diagnosis that's carried forward in medical practice. The next thing we determine is if the pulse is floating or deep. In order to do this, you need to feel several pulses to determine the difference. When you first touch your hand on the pulse, does the pulse jump out to you, or do you have to press down a little deeper to find it? So if it jumps up and it's on the surface, then it's called floating or superficial. And if you have to press down deeper, then it's deep. And sometimes you have to press down very deep, sometimes called a hidden or prison pulse, which has clinical significance. So a floating pulse generally refers to diseases and conditions that are external, fevers, colds, flus. It can also refer to somebody whose energy is weak, and their energy is floating on the surface and is not well rooted. So if a person has a cold or a flu and or you felt somebody's pulse many times and you're feeling a floating pulse, then you know that's what it's indicating. It can also indicate inflammation or conditions on the skin. Don't need the pulse to see that, though. A deep pulse generally refers to a more chronic condition. A floating pulse associated with deficiency of qi or blood is also a chronic condition. Then you're going to ask yourself, does the pulse have force or not? Or does it kind of jump out at your finger when you touch it? And how strong is that? If it's kind of weak, then it signifies deficient qi and deficient blood. If it's jumps out with force and strong, it means strong qi or excess or stagnation or heat or inflammation. Is the pulse long or short? Long, as I said earlier, is does it extend all over all three positions on the wrist, or does it go further than that, which is a very long pulse? That's usually a condition of excess, or it could be also normal with some people. A short pulse is when you feel the pulse only in one or two of the places that we designated. Then is the pulse large or small? In other words, is the impact against your finger when you're feeling it, is it large or small? Is the contour of the vessel, is that a thin, thready contour, or is it a large contour? All of this refers to an excess or deficiency. Is it regular or irregular? This is also very empirically true, that anyone who feels a pulse for 30 beats should be able to determine if it's skipping a beat, or if it's slowing down and speeding up, or if it's irregular and it skips, or if it's regular and it skips. Those are all have clinical significance. And in most cases, when you're encountering a pulse like that, it's a good idea to refer them to a cardiologist. And that, what contour does the pulse have? We spoke about a big, large, flowing, bubbly bubble that's passing underneath your finger that kind of glides along globe, the larger contoured pulse, or is it thin and thready, like a little thin thread that's floating on top of the water that you're trying to feel? And any other remarkable differences? But ask yourself these questions, that they're in your notes, and make it a habit to go through all of these and make a determination. Now, I know that when you first begin to take a pulse without very much experience, you may not have any frame of reference to make these determinations, but force yourself to do it. Just call it for whatever it is and write it down. Make a commitment that way. If you don't write it down, then you kind of walk away from the person. It could be this or it could be that. But write it down so you made a commitment about what it is that you decided. You could certainly say that it's regular or irregular. You can say whether it's fast or slow. Soon you'll be able to determine whether it's got force or not, and you'll be able to determine whether it's long or short, whether it's large or small. Don't even worry about what these things mean, but write those things down for each person whose pulse you feel. And certainly do it on your own to begin with, and try to make it a habit or a project out of feeling a certain number of pulses every day and keeping a notebook on them. Gradually, with experience, and it doesn't take all as much as you might think, these things begin to come into focus more. Here we have a video of how to take the pulse of another.
Michael, if there's sound with the video, we're not hearing it. But
yeah, there was. Okay. All right.
So you may need to kind of narrate.
All right. Good. Here is how you should take your own pulse, which I suggest you do right now. So you hold one hand up, and you reach around, so you have your index finger at the base of your thumb. And the middle finger is over the styloid process, which is the bone, and the ring finger right next to it. Count the beats within 30 seconds, and then reverse that and feel the pulse on the other side. the beats will be the same on both sides, but now for practice, I'm going to give you 30 seconds to take your own pulse in the way that we just showed, and I'll play this video again. Try to reach your hand around, and I'll tell you when we're going to start counting, and I'll tell you when time is up, and then you multiply that times 2 and write down the number of beats per minute. Beginning now. Five more seconds. Time. Okay, so now you should have the beats per minute of your own pulse, and you should have been able to tell if it's regular or irregular. And you noted that all down. Now we're going to go through the pulses, beginning with the normal pulse. A normal pulse, which like any kind of diagnostic system, you can always find some imbalance in somebody. But nevertheless, what we're looking for in a normal pulse is that it has spirit. It means that the coming and going of the pulse is distinct and it has force, or it means, or oppositely, the coming and going may be indistinct, minute, choppy. That means it, or without force. So that would be. But if it's coming and going and it has, it's distinctly felt and it has force, then it has spirit. Then that it has stomach chi, meaning that it's supple, flexible, harmonious, slightly slippery, uninhibited, and not deep. Contrary-wise, if it comes wiry, urgent, excess, or replete, large, or loses its suppleness and harmony, it's described as having no stomach chi. Then the fourth quality is whether it has root, called yugen. It means that it is neither floating nor deep, but is harmonious and moderate. If a chi position pulse, that's the third position pulse, cannot be felt all the way to the bone, it means the pulse is without root. So take that last thing to heart, because it's quite common that because people have weakness of their adrenals and kidneys and hormonal system, especially as we age, that the third position, remember the Sun Guan Chi, the Chi position, which is where the ring finger is placed, is quite commonly weaker. And if you can't find it at all, it means that this pulse is without root. And since the kidney is considered to be the root of yin and yang in the body, it's very important that we address the issue that somebody has kidney deficiency. Now, in Western herbal medicine, there really is no herb that is designated specifically as a kidney yin or kidney yang tonic or kidney qi tonic. So I began as a Western herbalist, but finding these deficiencies caused me to have to reach out to other sources to deal with deficiencies that I were perceiving. As many of you know, Western herbal medicine is so much based on detoxification. Detoxification means you're getting rid of something. Getting rid of something means that you may be weakening somebody if they don't have anything to get rid of. So detoxifying everybody, whether they're excess or deficient, is not a good thing. It needs to be according to each individual. And looking for tonics then that were appropriate to treating was the gateway that led me into wanting to learn more about Chinese herbal medicine, because they make such a big thing out of this, the deficiencies of qi, which is vital energy, blood. Two of these things are very, very much connected with pulse diagnosis, and then yin and yang. So following this procedure, I think, will be the best way to learn the pulse. Don't try to get the significance of what each pulse means in the way of actually recognizing the pulse itself. There's lots of reasons for this, and I'll tell you some of them, but just learn to recognize whether a pulse is fast or slow, whether it's soft or hard, whether it's on the surface or deep, whether it's wiry or soggy or slippery, any of these qualities I'm going to be discussing. Just learn those things, because when you're doing pulse diagnosis, people invariably have a combination that's unique to them of all of those, and that combination uniquely informs us as to what needs to be treated. So if you're trying to say, oh, I have this kind of pulse, I have a wiry pulse, therefore I have nervous tension and I'm depressed and I have liver qi stagnation, which would be the most obvious description of a wiry pulse, you might miss, for instance, that it's also fast. So you have a lot of anxiety and heat along with that, those qualities. So putting them together is going to be the stuff of pulse diagnosis. But first, we need to learn to recognize the 28 pulse images. Now, this may seem daunting, but I must say that many of these images you may not even encounter in the clinic, and some of them you encounter all the time. So moderate, the rate that we're evaluating is whether it's moderate, slow, rapid, or racing. And as we said, the normal range is 70 to 80 beats, often extending 60 to 90 beats. During sleep, it can go down to 40 beats per minute. It's all relating to an adult, excuse me. And this is how you measure the rate. We discussed that. Now we talk about the moderate pulse. It can either be moderate or it can be moderate and harmonious. It can either be a pathological condition, depending on the other symptoms that are being presented, or it can be a normal pulse. If it feels sluggish, even if it's at a normal rate when timed, and if it feels kind of lazy and retarded and overly leisure, it can indicate internal dampness. In other words, fluid retention in the vessels. That would be lipids obstructing circulation. Spleen and stomach deficiency with water and dampness retention. It's similar to the normal pulse except with other pathogenic factors. Now, when we talk about the spleen and some of these internal organs in Chinese medicine, we're not necessarily referring to the Western organ. We're referring to a function that is unique to Chinese medicine, and it's easy to understand after I've told you that the spleen basically refers to the body's overall metabolism, its ability to turn air, food, and water into vital energy. So it's something that happens not only in the stomach and the digestive system, which would be a superficial manifestation, but this is something that happens in every cell of the body as the cells manufacture mitochondria. So it tells us that the herbs like ginseng and codonopsis and astragalus that are designated as spleen qi tonics are things that actually affect mitochondrial replication, and that's how they increase vitality and energy. So a moderate pulse can be either a dampness syndrome, it's when it feels sticky and easily collects in the vessels, it can obstruct qi flow, or it can be a spleen and stomach deficiency causing a retention of water and dampness. It can also be a normal pulse. A slow pulse is less than 60 beats per minute. And as you can see here, the character is walking with snowshoes. It tells you that basically a slow pulse always means coldness. And again, you may ask, well, how do you evaluate a slow pulse? Well, I mentioned using the second hand of a watch and counting the seconds, the number of beats within 30 seconds, and multiplying that times 2 to get the beats per minute. But in older times, it was much more arduous, you know, assuming the times before clocks with second hands were even known, and or most Chinese doctors who didn't have them, how did they determine the speed of a pulse? It was a lot more of an arduous thing, and you can do it also. You count the number of beats in a complete respiration, in an inhaled and exhaled breath. Usually we pin that on the practitioner's breath. Assuming that the patient is sick, it may not be the best. Their breathing cycle may not reflect their health. Now, this predicates that the practitioner is healthy enough that their breath is relatively normal. You can imagine this is not a fast thing to do. You might need to do this over a period of time and average it out. But if you have like more than five beats in the course of a full respiration, you're counting more than five impulses, then that would be a fast breath. If it's less than three or four, or less than three rather, then it's a slow pulse. So a pulse can be slow and forceful, or it can be slow and forceless. So forceful means there's an accumulation of coldness. Or slow and forceless means the person is weak and the pulse is very, very slow, reflecting that weakness of qi. In biomedicine, you can have intracranial hypertension, obstructive jaundice, rheumatic heart disease, viral myocarditis, coronary heart disease, and digitalis poisoning that can cause these things. The slow pulse is sometimes seen in healthy people who are athletes or those who engage in daily physical labor. A rapid pulse is less than 3 beats per practitioner's breath, about 40 to 60 beats per minute, but with a regular rhythm. Well, that's a slow pulse, rather. About 90 to 140 beats per minute following practitioner's breath, it would be more than five times for complete respiration. It indicates heat, and the heat can be either full or empty. One of the most important things, and I may have to say it many, many times, is that one can have a full heat or empty heat. Empty heat is like what happens when a car is overheated and it's trying to make it up a hill. And it can't do that. Maybe it's run out of water, which is a yin fluid to the car. And the car overheats. That's empty heat. It's called yin deficiency. So even though there's heat, which would be a yang phenomenon, it's heat caused by deficiency. And the normal types of anti-inflammatories that are normally used by herbalists, including Western doctors who might use antibiotics for this condition, are not very effective for that type of empty heat or yin deficiency. And yin deficiency I sometimes call the joker in the deck because it is there oftentimes to defy our diagnostic assessment until we say, oops, forgot about yin deficiency. That's why this thing is feeling extremely yang or hot, and yet the person is appearing very, very weak before me. That condition specifically requires particular types of herbs to treat it. Now, in Western herbalism, the closest I've gotten to that is herbs that have berberine in them, which would be golden seal and Oregon grape and mahonia. So that particular type of herb for yin deficient heat. Now, I remember when I first learned about golden seal, it was described as both a tonic as well as something that got it rid of inflammation. I think that turmeric probably does a similar thing. And now, the opposite of that would be dandelion root, which would not work on somebody with yin deficiency, nor would echinacea. So learning to understand how to treat the different types of inflammations is part of what's important here. But the most important thing is to be able to determine that you're feeling a rapid pulse, which is 90 plus beats per minute. A racing or a hurried pulse is very fast, sometimes known as tachycardia, 100 to 120 beats per minute. Again, we try to determine whether it's full or empty, meaning is the pulse big? Does it feel like there's a lot of blood rushing through? Is the impulse, the force of it strong? Or is it very weak and running quickly? Those kinds of things tell us about the approach, strategy we need to take in order to treat effectively. So a racing or hurried pulse is oftentimes associated with yin exhaustion or hyperactivity of yang. Hyperactivity of yang and excess heat, well, that's where you do your detoxification and cleansing processes, laxatives, blood clearing, alteratives. But yin exhaustion means we need to use herbs that are treating the heat that is associated with yin deficiency, as well as giving tonics for yin itself, which usually is prepared. Romania is one of the herbs given, or the herb ophiopagon is also given in formula. So in biomedicine, we might have associated diseases such as hypertensive cardiopathy, coronary heart disease, hyperthyroidism, myocarditis, pericarditis, and so forth. The next thing is depth. And there are three levels of depth that we're trying to assess, whether it's floating, sinking or deep, or whether it's very deep, which is hidden or prisoner pulse. A floating pulse is when it's felt on the most superficial level, pressing the surface of the skin. It represents either acute external conditions or a weak condition if there is no root. Remember what root is? Root is when you can't feel a kidney pulse. That's the third position in chi, the one under your ring finger. If you don't feel that, then the pulse has no root. So it may be, if you're trying to feel whether there's a root or not, only the middle position, in the place where you determined that it was a floating pulse, you'll get confused. But feel the pulse in the ring position, and if you don't feel that there's a pulse there at all, then it's said that there's no root. I remember Ted Kapchuk, one of the first lectures, and the only lecture actually I heard him speak was way back in the beginning of my career in the 70s. He said, if you want to learn pulse diagnosis, find somebody who has the type of pulse, who's likely to have the type of pulse you want to learn about. So in this case, to learn what a floating pulse is, find somebody with a fever and or a cold or flu and just give them a timeout and say, wait a minute, I just want to feel your pulse right now so I know what a floating pulse is. And once you feel one pulse that you can identify clearly, it's oftentimes much easier to determine afterwards. But remember, the floating pulse can be either an exterior syndrome or it can be a deficiency syndrome. So it's an exterior syndrome if it's floating and forceful, or it's floating and moderate. Or it's a deficiency syndrome if it's floating, forceless, and or thin. Or if it's floating and forceless. Force here is equated with the power of yang. A deep pulse can only be pressed very deep, to the organ level, as it said, by pressing down to find the pulse. Usually, it indicates a chronic condition, whereas the floating pulse is usually represents an acute condition unless it's the deficiency type. A deep pulse generally represents a chronic condition. So if it's deep and full or deep and weak, it tells us whether the condition is excess or deficient. So the interior syndrome, it's deep or submerged and forceful, means there's an excess in the internal. Here, the herbs that we're using are going to be herbs like colagogues, alteratives, laxatives, cleansing products and routines. But submerged and forceless means interior deficiency. This requires tonification. And if there's any symptoms, then you give herbs to treat those symptoms, regardless of what else is happening. You always add the herb that you know is going to be effective for that symptom. For instance, if somebody has an infection or inflammation, and you say, well, the first thing I know that treats that is going to be echinacea, or it's going to be dandelion or red clover or honeysuckle flowers or forsythia blossoms, any of those things clear heat, clear inflammation, and you're giving it, even though somebody has signs of heat, but it's internal and they're deficient. So that's called treating the branch. You won't get very, very far doing only that unless you treat the root, the constitution, at the same time by adding some herbs that treat the deficiency. In this case, qi and blood. You can't go wrong usually if you think of, begin by thinking that this is the place where you might think of adding American ginseng. I mean, you don't necessarily know all the Chinese herbs for tonification, but American ginseng treats both qi and blood. And it has not strongly yang properties, and it has not strongly yin properties, so it treats all deficiencies in a very moderate way. And adding a smaller amount of American ginseng to somebody who's not responding to an inflammatory treatment will make that treatment stronger and more effective, because you're giving the body more strength to be able to use the major tool to overcome the pathogenesis. A hidden pulse is almost when the pulse can't be found at all. It's very deep, and it comes across with severe shock, hemorrhage, sudden drop in blood pressure. Not likely to find this in your clinic very often unless somebody's been in some crisis. The length of the pulse. Two questions to determine there. Is it long or short? Ask yourself those questions. A long pulse, called Chang Mai, is a yang pulse. It's felt beyond all three fingers, usually some form of excess heat, energy congestion, or phlegm. It can also be normal with some people, so don't take these as necessarily a tried and true, this is it type of diagnosis. Remember that what we're doing is differential diagnosis. Differential diagnosis is that we're evaluating things according to what the patient is telling us, how they're presenting to us, how their bowel movements are, their digestion, how their energy presents, and how they experience their energy, whether they're weak or they're strong, and the condition of their tongue. These are all encompassed in the four diagnoses. One of those four diagnoses is palpation, so we can touch the person on their abdomen, and if it's real soft and kind of mushy, that's a deficiency condition, and that just by palpating the abdomen. Palpation is also part of pulse diagnosis. So I can't emphasize this enough. Differential diagnosis means that you take several different parameters, and then you determine based upon that how many of these agree and disagree and go and develop a strategy around that. Now, some question comes up sometimes when students come to me or other acupuncturists and they say, well, I do iridology, or I do kinesiology, or I do intuitive diagnosis, or I do tarot diagnosis. I'm the guy who created the herbal tarot deck. If that's all you do, I don't think that cuts it. But if that's part of a whole differential process, you can do anything you want. But be sure that it's differential. In other words, you're examining several parameters, and if you want to add these other things and you think there's a need for them, then and that's what you like, do that. I would say that pulse is really worth all the energy that you might put in to get some facility at it, because it really tells us the energies of a person and how they can change through different influences and so forth. So the long pulse can be either a deficiency or an excess. If it's a deficiency, it means a deficiency of qi, blood, or yin. If it's an excess, it usually means a dampness pathogenesis. A short pulse means it can't be felt in all three positions. It's usually caused by deficiency or stagnation. Usually a short pulse is going to be short and forceful, or it's going to be short and forceless. So a short and forceful pulse means there's chi stagnation, something blocking. Or if it's short and forceless, it means there's chi deficiency. Now, one of the most advanced concepts of herbal medicine is the concept of stagnation. And in the East-West Herb course, every year I teach a course called the Five Stagnations. And qi and blood stagnation are two of the most important. Sometimes these are described as the mother of all disease. Stagnation, let's say, for instance, we have, when we're evaluating somebody, we're evaluating the disease that they have, and then we're evaluating whether they have deficiencies and excesses in what organs, and whether it's qi, blood, yin, or yang. But there's this other factor to think about. Is there a stagnation? And usually if a condition is long, or if it's an older person, there's always going to be some stagnation. And the herbs herbs need to be added to the formula to move qi and blood. And unfortunately, again, this is not clearly delineated in Western herbalism, so that Western herbalists don't have those tools so readily available in their studies. However, in the old herbs that move blood were simply classified as herbs that promoted menstruation, emmenagogues. So all the herbs that you know of as emmenagogues are blood movers. Wow, this opens us up to the fact that these things don't only cause women to have their periods, but it also causes increases blood circulation in both men and women. That's your blue cohosh, your black cohosh, your wild ginger, and your motherwort, your safflower and calendula blossoms. All of these herbs and many others, and pennyroyal, for instance, is another one. Pennyroyal has got a bad rap because of people taking the oil to abort themselves. But taking the herb is perfectly safe, and is a great herb to use to promote blood circulation when that's needed. So adding a small amount of these to any formula to increase blood circulation is very, very important, and it should be considered even if you can't normally think that that's what needs to be done. A formula becomes activated when you have blood circulation. Now, Western herbalists frequently resort to the use of ginger and or cayenne pepper. Cayenne peppers can be very harsh on people's gut, and every time I try to return to it based on my teaching with Dr. Christopher, it doesn't feel good. I used to be able to level a teaspoon of it at a time, and even more. Can't do it anymore. And I think that that's how a lot of people are at with it. So that the cayenne doctors don't serve us today. The herb lobelia has a wonderful value because it both moves blood and qi, and it also is antispasmodic, which means that it releases nervous tension. So, however, you can't use a lot of lobelia or it causes nausea and vomiting. But a small amount of lobelia and antispasmodic and or a stimulant like cayenne or ginger makes any other herbs that you put with it double or triples effective because it delivers them and it helps them to move to the places where they need to go. So, but broadening out your whole spectrum of herbs that you're using for moving blood and for relieving tension internally will greatly facilitate your mastery of herbal medicine. The next quality that we need to assess is the width of the pulse. Here, you've felt several pulses, and you feel that now you have a sense that some people have a very large artery that you're feeling. And by this, what you're going to do is you're going to roll your finger back and forth to actually feel the artery. Not going to roll it longitudinally, and that's how you're going to feel the length of the pulse. But here you're going to roll it back and forth so you feel the width of the artery. Some people have a very thin thread-like pulse. It's described in the ancient literature as a silken thread floating in water. So when you touch it, it just feels very, very thin. Now, sometimes a thready pulse or a thin pulse isn't quite that thin, but it's thin enough to tell us that such an individual has qi and blood deficiency. Now, here we have the indications of a thin, thready pulse as being deficient in qi, blood, and or yin. In other words, there isn't enough fluidic substance to fill, which would be yin substance, to fill the artery. But a yin pulse can also indicate, or thin pulse can also indicate dampness. And you might say, well, how can this be? If there's dampness, you'd think that there's going to be more fluid in the artery. When somebody is deficient in qi, which is, let's consider this the life fire, and that qi is low, that means digestion is sloppy, and what's left is a whole bunch of fluids and mucus and so forth that gather and accumulate in the tissues of the body. First in the lungs, and so people who have spleen deficiency, bad metabolism, poor metabolism, are going to have more dampness. They're going to look more like that pear-shaped hypothyroid type of individual. There's a typical dampness type of individual. So anyone who has deficiency may have an excess of dampness. This means, of course, that you're going to use herbs to get rid of dampness. Dampness can manifest as edema, or it can manifest as mucus when it becomes phlegm. So you're going to use herbs to get rid of either mucus or fluid in the body. But it's within the context of a deficiency because it's a thin, thready pulse. So you need to have tonics in there. So again, if you're giving a diuretic to somebody who's weak, that weakens them further. Yeah, it may get rid of some fluid, but it doesn't do anything for the underlying deficiency. Again, adding American ginseng, and I'm picking on that one because it's one that everybody knows about, as a good way to begin, to treat the root in order to activate the branch elimination, the pruning of the branch. If you don't have any strength when you're going out and pruning your trees, then you're not going to be able to get anywhere to get the excess branches off the tree. So you have to treat the root in order for the body to be able to use the tool that creates diuresis in the body that might come from herbs like parsley or uva ursi, or cleavers, or other kinds of Western herbs, which are really wonderful herbs to use. But here, understanding this theory behind it will help you to be more effective. Rhythm. I got rhythm, and here we go. If you have rhythm, it's not such a good idea. You want to have a pulse that's going to be relatively even. And so there are three types of irregular pulses. A hurried pulse, which is rapid, and irregularly irregular. In other words, it doesn't stop at the same number of beats. A knotted pulse means it's slow and irregularly irregular. In other words, it's slow, 60 beats or less, and doesn't stop in regular times. The intermittent pulse means it's slow and it's regularly irregular. So it hits bump, 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 bump. So that pulse is definitely reflecting the individual who has it. Slow, difficult to get around having to make frequent stops, catch their breath, heart problems. The knotted pulse is bump, 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 bump. That's slow and irregularly irregular. A hurried pulse is bump, 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 however number of fast beats. So the hurried or hasty pulse, sumai, is a yang pulse. And you see a pinball machine. It's a very good image to think about when you're feeling an irregularly fast pulse. It's rapid and irregularly irregular. It's heat caused by qi and blood stagnation. Remember, stagnation being the mother of all diseases. The more frequent the misbeats, the more likely there is to be a cardiopathology. And in general, pulses that are irregular should be referred to a medical doctor. So you can have an excess syndrome, which is rapid, irregular, and forceful, or a deficiency syndrome, which is rapid, irregular, and forceless. A knotted pulse, jimai, is yin. It's slow with irregularly irregular pulse beats. After missing a beat, the pulse immediately resumes. This is a cold pattern indicating circulation blocked by phlegm, cold, or tumors. Or it can just be a cold condition without phlegm, cold, or tumors. Just an indication of cold and yang deficiency. An intermittent pulse, dai mai, is yin. It misses a beat at regular intervals. And the more frequent the miss, the more serious is the condition. I once felt this on a very old man who was close to 90 years old. And usually when people have a pulse like this, it means that they're not long for this world. Their energy is failing them, and they need to really take it easy to save their energy. It means heart qi deficiency, possibly blood stagnation. Here's where hawthorn is definitely going to be one of the herbs to use, but also the herb Cactus grandiflorus is very specific for an irregular pulse, especially when there's deficiency like this or excess. Especially, I would say excess, because Cactus grandiflorum is very calming and very relaxing. So if you're going to put it with a intermittent pulse, which is a slow and irregular, then you're going to want to add other herbs to it to counterbalance that. But Cactus grandiflorum is an herb that was used by the eclectics for irregular pulse beats. How effective it is, I can't really say. Next thing we're going to feel for is arterial wall tension. Here, you're feeling not the fluid inside. You're feeling not the width of the pulse. You're feeling not the length, not whether it's on the surface or deep. You're feeling the tension that's actually on the artery. The artery of the body is wrapped around by nerves, so that the initial effect of qi that pushes the blood into the vessels is actually continued on through with the contraction of the artery to continue to milk it forward. So it's feeling the artery itself tells us about the nervous system very directly, especially if it's wiry. Now, if you can imagine somebody who's tense, suffers from anxiety, depression, PMS, those are typically that type of individual, the person you want to go to and say, let me feel your pulse, especially over the left-hand guan, left-hand bar position, which is the liver position, the middle position of the left hand, which is the home of the liver and wood element. And if it's wiry in that position, that tells you about anxiety, nervousness, and stress, worries, and so forth. And there are specific herbs that relieve that condition, which is called liver qi stagnation. The treatment of based on the pulse is in the third part of this series that I'm going to be doing, using herbs to treat the symptoms found in pulse diagnosis. So the wiry pulse is sometimes compared to feeling the string of a guitar string or a violin string. It feels long, intense, and at all levels of pressure. Sometimes it's an indication of wind. Wind is basically the body's reaction to a pathogenesis. In other words, wind is neurological reaction to a disease that's occurring to the body. And there, except for the wiry pulse, there's no way to determine wind from the pulse. One can just assume it. When it's thicker, generally it means that there's an excess of tension. When it's thinner, it means there's deficiency. Excess meaning excess of yang, excess meaning stagnation, deficient meaning a deficiency of qi, blood, fluids. Indications of a wiry bowstring pulse are usually liver and gallbladder disease. It can be an indication of phlegm, pain, or malaria. It can tell us about arteriosclerosis, increased arterial pressure, peripheral resistance or vasotonia, hepatitis, cirrhosis, hepatocarcinoma, hypertension. So one of the ways to learn to recognize this pulse is find somebody who's uptight, anxious, and nervous, and at the time when they're feeling that way, feel their pulse, and especially in the left bar position, the left middle position, and you'll probably be feeling a wiry pulse. A tight pulse is easy to confuse with a wiry pulse. It feels twisted like a rope. A tight pulse, you may not have the emotional component. That's one of the ways differentially to determine whether it's tight or wiry. And there are other signs and symptoms that might suggest that there's a lot of coldness that causes you to shiver and or become tight in your body. And so the pulse reflects that, or it can be arteriosclerosis. So a tight pulse causes contraction, cold in the body. It makes the vessels contract and the pulse becomes light. It can also reflect food stagnation. And this is predicated on the fact that the reason why food isn't missing is because the gut is too cold. Eating too much cold, raw foods over a long period of time can injure the digestive qi and causes things to feel heavy in your gut. You can't eat very much, and food stagnation results. And so the tight pulse can tell you that somebody has food stagnation if it's associated with gastrointestinal problems. Pain can also be caused by obstruction, especially when it's associated with coldness. A hollow pulse. It's like a scallion stalk. If you ever felt an onion stalk and pressed on it, it has very distinct outer cover, but when you press on it, there's nothing underneath. Can you feel on a pulse when you press on it that you feel its arterial diameter substance, but underneath it, what you're feeling is soft, empty, and hollow? It represents a severe loss of blood or essence. This is not a real common pulse in the clinic, but it can happen. And obviously a hollow and forceless pulse means there's a loss of blood. But a hollow and rapid pulse means yin depletion. Yin means all the fluids of the body, including the good ones. We need a certain amount of fluid in our body in order for lubrication and such. Blood is a part of yin. So if you have blood deficiency, then we tonify blood. But yin deficiency, or yin depletion, as it's mentioned here, it's going to be hollow and rapid. This means yin deficiency. So that means we have to tonify blood using herbs like Romania, wild asparagus root, not the cultivated one that we eat, it's a vegetable, the herb ophiopagon, an herb which can be readily grown throughout this country, I believe. It's called Japanese turf lily. It makes little white bulblets at the bottom. And you can actually eat those. They taste kind of sweet. And there's many different species of this. And I've tried many of them, and they all have similar properties. But the Ophiopagon japonicus is specifically the yin tonic par excellence. It has properties very similar to American ginseng. So, again, if you're treating a deficiency, as I said, and you can't necessarily remember all the tonics yet, you can always add a small amount of American ginseng or use American ginseng to treat that deficiency. It'll work very nicely. A leather or drum skin pulse. Again, this is not one that you're likely to feel in a clinic, but in case you do, I have felt it once in my career. It literally feels like when you hit a drum and it's soft, and, you know, you haven't heated it up so it's gotten tense, and it goes thud, nothing's there. It means severe blood loss and blood essence. So again, this may be a situation where if you can't treat it yourself, if there's access to a medical care, that you might want to refer them to that. The scattered pulse is also not felt that often in the clinic. It's large, floating, and weak, and it's sort of like these little Cheerios, Cheerios, floating on the top of a bowl of milk. So what you're feeling is like when you press on the surface, the chi scatters, it moves around. It's floating, and it can be wide or large. It disappears with heavy pressure. It means chi and blood deficiency. It can be severe kidney chi deficiency. Deficiency of original chi and slowness is called chi and yang deficiency. Deficiency in rapid and scattered is called severe blood deficiency with empty heat. Empty heat being, again, that yin deficient condition, the joker in the box that I talked about. We have to use herbs that clear the heat as well as herbs that tonify the deficiency. It means the original qi is floating without any yang and with yin fire. That's qi, that's yin deficiency again. Forceful pulses. We have six forceful pulses, the replete or excess pulse, the empty pulse, force is general, so meaning lack of force is empty. A firm or confined pulse, a vacuous pulse, a weak pulse, or a soggy pulse. So, as I mentioned, one of the questions you ask yourself is, does this pulse have force? And then you have six choices to decide what kind of force is manifesting. With a little practice, you'll easily get that. A full and excess pulse. You're going to find it in this lumberjack who is looking forward to that big pile of flapjacks as he goes down to cut down his tree. It's felt in all three fingers and in all depths, the top depth, the middle depth, and the lower depth. It's completely excess. It's thick, wide, forceful. It indicates an excess condition. This is when all the body cleansing is really, really a good thing to do, the fruit juice cleansing. Fasting, alteratives, blood purifiers, laxatives, and all the kinds of things that get rid of excess should be given to such a person. The empty or vacuous pulse is a yin pulse. It's wide and it's forceless and it's very slack. In other words, the force is very, very weak on it. And it's kind of flaccid and wide, and it's and you feel it that way in all three positions. In other words, surface, middle, and deep. With either a heavy or a light pressure, and it feels empty. It's a yin pulse. So you can have floating and deficient. You can have deep and deficient. You can have choppy and deficient. You can have rapid and deficient. You can have slow and deficient. And each of these represent qi deficiency, internal deficiency, blood deficiency, yin deficiency, yang deficiency. And there are specific herbs for each of these when you study the tonics that you can go for. Until you get into the third course where I might talk about more specific herbal treatments and formulas, because formulas and herbs are classified by the pulses as well, going with American ginseng as a root or constitutional herb to support the righteous qi, the internal deficiency, would take you a long way towards success in treatment of somebody with this kind of a pulse. A firm or confined pulse is yang within yin. It's very deep down, forceful, bowstring. It's yang within yin. So there's internal cold, hernia, lumps, and masses. Not an easy pulse to feel. Normally, I think that when somebody has a hernia and they have lumps and masses that you're trying to treat, you might or might not feel this pulse or identify, let's say, and so it may not be that important clinically as one of the diagnostic parameters, but it's there. The faint pulse, however, is common. It's thin, forceless, and it's very vague. It's you see here a picture of a castaway. He's dehydrated, desperate, stranded on a desert island. He's, think of it as thin, thready, meaning a deficiency of qi and blood. It can also indicate yin deficiency. If it's fine and with fullness, or it's wiry or tight, it indicates dampness. Remember, when you have a qi deficiency in the body, then you can assume that there may also be dampness. We will get to the slippery pulse pretty soon. And slippery is a congealed dampness. And it means that the body, that the dampness in the body has congealed, has become heated, and it's turned into phlegm. And that's another level of damp stagnation. Dampness itself is not turned into phlegm. It just means that there's a lot of fluid in the body because the qi is low. Think of life as being something like a little flicker of a flame engulfed and it's sitting on the top of a water level and wax. And if you increase the level of wax, the flame begins to flicker, the qi begins to waver. And you increase it a little bit more, and it wavers more. But if you increase the flame and you make it warmer, it evaporates the fluid and it holds it back down. It evaporates the wax so that the qi is bright and clear. But all of this is dealing with digestion and assimilation, metabolism. So if the metabolism is weak, our body tends to accumulate more fluids in the body. And that fluid then in turn further weakens the vital life flame or qi in the body. So we go after qi tonics. Ginseng is very important, especially Chinese ginseng in this case. Astragalus is another really important qi tonic. I also have identified elecampane root as a qi tonic, having a good effect on lung qi deficiency. The weak or frail pulse is a yin pulse. It's deep, thin, and forceless. You're beginning to see now, I think, that we've already identified deep pulses, thin pulses, and we have identified forceless pulses. So some of these pulses that we're identifying are a combination of those. So a weak or frail pulse is both deep, thin, and forceless. And it means the same thing as each one of those others might have meant, except more so, deficiency of qi and blood and a sign of decline. Soft or soggy pulse, floating, thready, and soft, like a piece of thread floating in the water. I'm saying this is similar to the thin and thready pulse. There is no force, and if it's pressed, it becomes weaker and weaker. It means spleen weakness with dampness. This is the key here, is that it's soft, meaning there's a lot of kind of fluidy mushiness underneath it. So it means blood and qi deficiency with dampness. So you're going to use diuretic herbs and use the diuretic herbs that are more tonic. For instance, I would use parsley root as opposed to parsley aerial portions of the parsley, because the roots generally reflect of a diuretic, is more of a tonic property, and will target this type of deficiency dampness condition. And again, I would combine it with American ginseng or some tonic herb like this that would be appropriate to the individual. Pulse, contour, and flow wave. We have four different pulses here. Slippery, rough or choppy, flooding or surging, stirred or moving pulse. Slippery pulse. It feels like globules gliding smooth. The description in the second century classic was like pearls rolling in a dish. Well, if you take marbles and put it in a dish and you kind of move the dish around, you'll see blue, 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 blue. Well, imagine when you have your finger on the pulse, it's kind of globules, rounded and shaped, moving through. It's like you're feeling globs of fat under your fingers, moving along. It's not as much of a pointed force as more of a rounded force. It indicates elevated sugar lipids, and the general dampness and phlegm. Sugar causes phlegm. This is an indication of phlegm in the body. It's possibly indicative of food stagnation, tending towards edema, tumors, and is characteristically found as a normal pulse during pregnancy. Because if you women generally have more dampness in their system because of the fetus that they're holding. So one of the ways to identify for certain a slippery pulse is feel a few women's pulses, especially on the right guan or bar position, which is the spleen position, on the right hand, middle position. And you should be feeling a slippery pulse, the more gliding quality rather than a sharp pointed. So it can mean food stagnation, phlegm or dampness, and excess heat. Now, getting rid of phlegm in Western herbalism, especially if you've learned what herbs are being used in Chinese medicine, can be a problem because we have herbs that are expectorant, but are they phlegm dissolving? Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. We need to make that determination through experience. But the herb in Western herbalism that is phlegm dissolving is not being used. And that's Jack in the Pulpit, the root of that. It has a lot of oxalic acid in it, so normally it's not used. However, it was eaten by the Indians, but it had to be aged for several months, and then they ground it into a flour and they ate it. And under those situations, the toxic aspects of Jack in the Pulpit were neutralized. Boiling it for a long time, I'd say an hour, will also neutralize it. And it cuts phlegm, it dissolves it. I would say that rather than messing around with Jack in the Pulpit, by the way, the eclectics used erysema, Jack in the Pulpit root. We use in Chinese medicine, we use pinelia root, which is in the same family, ericaceae family. And again, the pinelia is processed in Chinese medicine. It's usually fried in ginger juice. I don't recommend you're doing it yourself because I've never done it myself because I haven't seen anybody do it, and I don't trust it without having seen somebody else do it and then using the herb after that, knowing that it's safe. So you can buy pinelia root from Chinese pharmacies, but that is the herb of choice to use for phlegm, and it's almost always paired with ginger, fresh ginger, especially if it's an external condition. Phlegm oftentimes can be external, and pinelia are treatments for that kind of dampness. However, there is another herb, especially that gets rid of dampness. It's something that we frequently peel and throw away, and I would say that we should bring this back into practice, and that's citrus peel. In Chinese medicine, tangerine is usually used, but you can also use orange peel, organic orange, organic tangerine peel. And I remember once a curious treatment Hannah Kroger recommended, which was to boil grapefruit rind, grapefruit peel, for colds and flus and for phlegm. I don't know where she got that from, but that would work perfectly fine. Lemon peel also dries phlegm. These herbs have sinephrine, which is very closely related to epinephrine, which is found in ephedra. So there's that kind of anti-congestive property to them. And they also regulate qi, which means they help move congestion in the gut, in the stomach, digestion. And they also dry. So the combination of pinelia and ginger and citrus peel, tangerine or orange, and then a diuretic. Now, in Chinese medicine, they use the herb called poya cocos, or fuling, as a diuretic. And that particular formula called twice-cured decoction, or twice-cured formula, is like the mother formula for all forms of dampness. And it's oftentimes used as a single entity anytime you want to clear dampness from the system. You can give somebody that formula plus whatever else is going on. Fortunately, as I will point out in the second, in the third sequel to this pulse diagnosis series, you can purchase citrus and pinelia, or urchin tong, urchin wan, from plum flower. So you can have this on hand, and you can give somebody a bottle of these pills, usually taking 8 pills 3 times a day or 12 twice a day. Whenever there's a dampness complex, along with whatever else that you're treating that the person is complaining of. So that's called citrus and pinelia formula, or urchin tong. The choppy pulse. Imagine a VW bug driving over irregularly spaced bumps of varying sizes. The Chinese image is like a knife scraping on bamboo. So imagine, boop, boop, boop. So it's an irregular pulse, but it doesn't necessarily miss a beat. It does a catch-up beat because it's moving unevenly. This can happen if there's either stagnation, in other words, a blockage in the system, in which case we use the herbs that move stagnation. We use citrus peel for phlegm stagnation. We use motherwort and hawthorn for blood stagnation, or angelica root is another good one. And we use various carminative herbs for qi stagnation. In most cases, a choppy pulse is indicative of blood deficiency, damaged essence, or blood stagnation. Now, if the blood is weak in the body, what happens is it's just like a stream or a river that's running shallow. The water kind of bumps over the rocks and bumps against them and circles around and catches up and moves faster. And so it's sort of that kind of irregularity rather than an excess irregularity. If it's choppy and forceful, that is a type of qi and blood stagnation, a food stagnation, or phlegm retention. So the way you determine that is by other qualities you might feel on the pulse, by looking at the tongue, and by the symptoms that the person is presenting, or other signs of diagnostic indications that hopefully you will learn. If it's a deficiency syndrome, and it's choppy and forceless, then we look to the possibility of blood deficiency, essence deficiency, threatened abortion, seminal emission. It's very important to give people the most nourishing foods available when they have deficiency of blood and or even qi for that matter. Even in Ayurveda, the ancient Ayurvedic texts say that if somebody is weak and run down, they must eat meat, and they include all different types of animals that can be eaten. So you can't treat deficiency syndromes if the diet that you're eating got you, made you, that may have gotten you deficient in the first place, and then you're going to try to use a vegetarian model to treat it. It isn't going to work. You're not going to do it. You have to give things like bone marrow soup, beef stew, and mix herbs, chitonic herbs like astragalus into it, and maybe a little ginseng or codonopsis is a milder form of ginseng that you can mix into the soup and make a stew with these things and eat them. Dong Quai is also taken because it moves blood so nicely and helps to promote the formation of blood in the body. But this is how you treat deficiencies syndromes, and we'll get more into that more in the third section. And so the flooding or surging pulse, it arrives and departs with force, just like the ocean surf. It means various acute diseases. Means inflammation, excessive pathogenic heat. May be normal in the summer, but if it's surging and forceless, it can be a yin deficiency. In other words, it's just kind of like the waves are coming in and they're just flapping on the beach with no effect. Generally, it means excess heat on the qi level. And here we look to formulas like Yin Chao San, a very famous formula that's used now for colds and flus. Things anti-inflammatories and antibacterial types of herbs. Izatis is an antiviral herb, or the moss that grows on the trees. What's the name? Well, you'll think of the name of it anyway.
Usnea.
These various herbs. Usnea, thank you. These are the kinds of herbs that are used for flooding or surging pulse to get rid of pyrogenic heat. Cat's claw would be another one. And the last one is the moving or stirred pulse. Dong Mai, it's a yang pulse. It's short, rapid, and it's slippery with no sense of arrival or departure. It feels like a jumping bean. It's often felt in the middle position. This is not one that you're likely to feel in the pulse very much. It mostly occurs as a result of emotional shock, confusion, and a traumatic blood and qi disturbance. Some people also look at a large and big pulse, which I think has already been contained in the previous pulses, and that's why most people are settled with 28 pulses, but here we have 29 because it occurs in some texts. And if it's wide and forceful, it means excess heat. But if it's wide and forceless, it means deficiency. So forceless means the way the jump is against your finger. And wide means it's big. We've already talked about a wide pulse, so I think this is a little redundant if you want to know the truth. Since this pulse is going to be recorded and you can study this at length, I'm going to leave this page for you to look at and study a little bit more, and put it into the context of everything we've been talking about. But you can see that we're looking at the pulses in terms of their depth, their rate, their strength, their width, their length, their shape, and their rhythm. Then there's the complex pathological pulses. In other words, the pulses that have multiple qualities. So, for instance, a rapid, irregular pulse, which is the hasty pulse, would have an irregular rhythm and it's fast. A scattered pulse would be superficial, wide, and forceless. So, these pulses mean that they're complex. They're a combination of these other different qualities. So, the art of pulse diagnosis. In interpreting pulse findings, the patient's pulse is as unique as the patient themselves. It's reflected in the combination of pulses, reflected in the overall pulse quality combined with the more subtle differences in terms of the six positions on each wrist. Now, many of these pulses are things that are, you know, just with a little practice, I dare say that, you know, six or seven or eight of us with experience with pulses can get together and probably agree on most of them. When we're trying to evaluate subtle differences on each of the six positions, there may be differences there. And that's where the imprecision of pulse diagnosis comes in. So when you're trying to diagnose individual organs, don't count on that as being necessarily true unless it corresponds with other things that you're getting in terms of diagnosis assessment. I'm going to have you leave this page for a little while so that you, when you review this webinar, you can study this at length and maybe stop it and copy it. But it tells you a little bit about the significance of the pulses. Now, the sources for my for this pulse webinar, which has taken me actually quite a long time, I'd say about 3 or 4 months to prepare this webinar for you. The best book, overall book, I think, is The Secret of Chinese Pulse Diagnosis by Bob Flaws in Blue Poppy Press. Another really tremendous book that I recommend all of my students to have is Traditional Chinese Medicine Study Guide by Chao Yi and Al Stone. And many of the illustrations that I used in this, not the cartoon types, they were done specifically by one of our students and graduates, but some of the other illustrations were taken from that book. Pulse Diagnosis, A Clinical Guide by Sean Walsh and Emma King is an excellent book. Li Shi Shen, Pulse Studies by Li Shi Shen Ching and William Morris. He's going to be teaching at our up and coming East-West Symposium. William Morris is one of the major exponents. He's written a book on pulse diagnosis, as you can see here, and I think it's a very good book. Pulse Diagnosis by Liu Yubin. I happened to bump into a store in Chinatown that had this. I don't know that you're going to be able to find it. Pulse by Dr. V.S. Atavale, Chakamba Sanskrit, Pakistan, is a very reliable pulse diagnosis book, I think, for Ayurveda. I briefly looked at other Ayurvedic pulse diagnosis books that are out there that are more commonly available, and I don't think too much of them. This one here is much more authentic. A classic, and I consider it to be kind of almost like a constitutional background for all of pulse diagnosis. Not that it's authoritative in all these things, but that it compares pulse diagnosis of West and East, Ayurvedic, Chinese, Unani medicine, and Western medicine, written by Reuben Amber. And then specific diagnosis by Scudder, the eclectic physician. He assigns pulses associated with specific herbs. So I consulted all of these books in preparing this. This is information on the East-West Herb School and the system of planetary herbology that I teach, which combines Western Chinese and Ayurvedic medicine. And for more information about all this and any specials that may be running on our course, go to planetherbs.com. That's planetherbs.com, and you'll be up with the latest of what we're doing. So this completes part two of pulse diagnosis, the 28 pulses, and part three will be an herbal treatment based on the pulse and other diagnostic criteria. I don't know exactly when that'll be ready, but stay tuned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. That was really, really informative. I have never seen a presentation on pulse diagnosis that I thought was just that informative and helpful. So we really appreciate your putting that together.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephen.
Some people have asked if you're going to make like any kind of handouts or copies, slides to go with the recording for this, or?
Yeah, they were made, and I believe they are available on the American Herbalist Guild website.
Okay.
Hernandez
great.
Has them, and the essential aspects of these notes you will have, but not all of them. We're going to have a copy of this and put it on YouTube. And as I mentioned earlier, you can go look under my name and look under pulse diagnosis, and you'll find the part one, which is about an hour and 20-minute presentation that I gave earlier on pulse diagnosis, and this is part two, which will be up probably in a week or two.
Right, and it will be uploaded both on the AHG website and on YouTube, so you'll be able to watch it from either location for those of you who are asking about that. Someone asked, if you would review which three fingers go on which positions again, because probably very basic thing.
No, that's all right. I don't mind basic. Your index finger goes at the base of your thumb on the inside of your arm, just underneath the palmar part of your thumb. That's the index finger. The middle finger goes right over the styloid process, which is the bone that you feel on the inside of the radius of the arm. That oftentimes is the one that you position first, and then position the ring finger closest to you, proximal, right next to it, for the third position. So index is at the base of the thumb. The middle finger is over the styloid process, the bone in the middle, the bump that you'll easily feel. And the ring finger is right next to that.
Okay. Someone asks about what herbs you might use with the short pulse to remove the stagnant constipation.
Well, as I mentioned, this is not necessarily. I mentioned some herbal strategies with this seminar, but again, you don't want to just have a short pulse. You want to have it as short and thin, short and large. You know, these pulses go together, and that's why we said at the very beginning, learn to recognize the pulses exclusive of their indications first, and note that down. Force yourself to write it down. Put the person's name down and take the parameters, you know, the force is it strong or weak, the width and short or long. Just recognize those things. If you do that, you're well on your way to mastering pulse diagnosis.
So in your beginning, you might want to have a little checklist of things to look for and go down each thing on the checklist and feel for it.
Exactly. And make the call, though. That's the important thing, because don't just sit there and say, well, I think it's a little of this, a little of that. Make a determination. You'll know after with some experience more certainly that next time you encounter it. But take a stand. Sometimes these things seem amorphous, and if you keep them amorphous, they'll just stay that way forever.
Someone asked about the formula you mentioned that is phlegm dissolving that contains pineal root. So this is a quiet
citrus and pineal combination.
Okay, citrus and pineal.
She was one tongue. ER, the new word, CHEN, tongue.
Okay.
THANG. It's available in plum flower.
Yeah, they asked if it was the quiet cough formula from plum flower.
No.
Okay, it's a different one. Okay, that's all the questions we had. I think that did a great job, and we'll look forward to hearing the next installment. Aren't you teaching a class at the AHG conference too?
Yeah, I'm going to do a they haven't actually confirmed it yet, but I'm hoping to do a whole day on pulse and give you all the opportunity of really feeling the pulse together and with myself feeling and identifying them. And we're going to be able to get into perhaps all three levels of the discussion of pulse that I'm putting into three webinars here over the course of that day. That should give everybody a pretty good go at getting started on integrating pulse diagnosis and reestablishing it in the practice of all herbalism. It's not just Chinese medicine or Ayurveda. It should be there in Western herbalism as it has always been.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. Thanks again, Michael. And this, again, is recorded, so I'm sure that you'll want to review it again because it was a lot of information to digest at one sitting. So have a good evening, and good night, everyone, and thank you, Michael.
Thank you.